Mitch Pomerantz, President of American Council of the Blind. And Donna will be along as soon as she gets through with the students.
Artis Bazin, Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America Secretary.
Kevin Berkery from Burbank. I'm married to the secretary.
And who do you try to impress when you want something? The secretary. And congratulations to Artist also. She was elected a board member last evening.
Marcy Knudsen, member, Central Coast Low Vision Council chapter.
There's a nasty man here, and I think that he's planning on giving up on everything and retiring. Or is it that he's excited about life and going to have time? Jeff Tom.
Hi, it's Tricia Leeds. What hats do I wear? I'm the chair of the rehab committee at CCB. And also, I'm a rehab supervisor now at the Department of Rehab. So
very good. Okay, I'm going to let you talk to this nasty man here.
I'm Jeff Tom. I'm outgoing president of the California Council of the Blind and thrilled to be in another RSVC lunch.
Ah, thank you.
I'm Hazel Harmon, and I'm Roy Harmon's better half.
And if you want anything, you ask Roy's secretary, whose name is Hazel.
I'm Joni Patchy, and I have the two small dry stands at the EDD building in Sacramento, and I'm also the education chair for CCB right now.
Good girl. Here you go. Oh, she's a vendor, and she's married to a vendor. I know that life.
I'm Joseph Lopez, and I'm from Santa Barbara, and I'm a member of the San Diego Braille Club.
Yay!
Okay, thank you all for coming, and we welcome you here.
We have a newcomer.
Oh, who's that?
Who's that lady? That beautiful lady that just walked in here. Who is that? this is Ms. President Donna Pomerantz.
Hi there, Donna Pomerantz from Pasadena, California. Happy to be here. Just came from the students group. So,
thank you for joining us, Donna. Oh yeah, we're looking forward to have a wonderful relationship with the new board members, and of course I'm a new board member and an artist and Peter, so we're all looking forward to working with you, you know, this year and next year. And also I wanted to thank Jeff Tom for all that you've done for us, Jeff. We really, really appreciate everything. We have a sort of a poor showing of our vendors here because many of them just came back from Sacramento from a conference, and I guess it was so intense and so much to do there that they all got burnt out. So you know, Roy and Hazel really do entertain a lot of vendors. They're up till 5 in the morning, you know, talking and doing business and everything else. So we had a wonderful time. It was an excellent training conference, and hopefully we'll have it next year here in San Diego. So we're working on that project right now. And let's see. What Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California has been, we've been kind of keeping an eye on what's been happening with our program, not only nationally but also locally, you know, in California. And we're very, very happy with the progress that Roy Harmon, the chairperson of CPC, has made with our committee. It's slow and it's tedious and it's frustrating, but we you know, I personally see progress that we haven't had in a long time. We are really trying to make the department accountable with information. As we all know, information is so important to in order to function well and to know what's going on within your own program. And that's been very, very frustrating for us for the last, 10, 15, 20, well, not 20 years, but 10, 15 years in trying to know just how much money is in our set-aside fee and what kind of information the program provides for us, which has been very little, if any. And yet, by law, the Vendor Policy Committee is supposed to work in conjunction with the department in developing program and policy decisions. So, you can't make a car without parts. So we just don't have the parts. So, but anyway, I think Roy and the committee are doing as best that they can, and we are progressing. So we're heading in the right direction. Let me put it that way. And I know CCB has helped us with a couple of resolutions last year that we did send to the department, and I think it did get their attention. Because one resolution was in regard to quarterly reports. And so it is a little better. We still need it to be more comprehensive, but we're working on it. So Deb Meyer and JB are heading in that direction. We'd have it better, but. Okay, Elvis Xavier has just arrived.
Yeah.
No, Joe, that's fine for him right now.
Joe Xavier?
Okay. Wait a minute, David. We're going to interrupt because we've got some more people that have just arrived. Okay. Part of my sisterhood is right here, so you want to identify yourself.
Oh. Well, I already did, but I'll do again. Donna Pomerantz, Pasadena, California. Thank you for having me.
Joe Xavier, Department of Rehabilitation.
Daryl Wilkerson, Alameda Chapter Delegate.
And Peter Crockwell, Alameda Chapter President. We're both from San Pablo.
Okay, that's it. Now you can go back to speaking, David.
Anyway, welcome all of you here again, those of you that have just arrived. Anyway, as I was saying, continue to be involved with CVPC and also with CCB. Roy, did you want to say a few words before I introduce Dan Zippel? Okay.
Thank you, everyone, for showing up. And this is sort of an awkward meeting because we've got more chiefs here than we do Indians, and that's okay. Most of you have already heard everything I'm going to talk about at our meetings yesterday. Usually my end of the luncheon that I get to discuss is the legislation. And there's plenty of legislation out there, a lot of activity right now. Right now we're very concerned about H.R. 5983, which is the NISH bill or Ability One or JWAD, whoever you want to hang the tag on there. They're trying to take over our dining facilities in the DOD facilities that we have, especially those that are mess attendants. And this is not a good deal. David and I went to Congressman Bill Bray's office last month to lodge our protest against this. And Katrina McDonald, for those of you that don't know who she is, she's the lobbyist for BEA in Washington, D.C. They have visited Congressman Bill Bray's office, and she was told from emails to me that she has sent that Bill Bray did not really read this bill before he co-authored, and he is not in favor of the bill. And this is the same feeling that David and I got when we visited Congressman Bill Bray's office in San Diego last month. So it is a tough bill, but if the worst that can happen is that we could lose dining facilities with mess attendants all across the nation. And this is of concern in California because we do have several facilities now that are considered mess attendants. Fort Irwin. And if we get the Marine contract, we have, within the Marine contract, we have Miramar, which is a mess attendant facility, as well as Bridgeport. So that could jeopardize Randolph Shepherd's position. Emails are going as of this morning to the powers that be within our program in California to notify them. And of course, we will, as RSVC Executive Committee, will continue to bring it to the attention of our vendors.
What's the number of the bill?
5983. HR. And it's pretty lengthy, but it's easy to read. At least it was for me. I guess I'm just starting to understand this stuff. And, God, never thought I'd be able to do that. Anyway, I know we're short on time. Well, no, we're not. We're not just 10 after. What the heck? I can keep going. The USPS. The USPS contract for California has been moving forward. There was an evidentiary hearing request filed, and the proceedings have begun. One day was of involvement already, and there is a continuance. It'll be into next year before we get our next visitation with the judge, and this is an opportunity for the vendors in California to receive commissions from all the small post office out there with vending machines. It will not affect vending locations that we have vendors in at currently, or it will not affect our vending routes with at the post office that we have. It will not affect the small facilities with a commission that they want. It's only going to the commission that is requested by the post office is only going to be going to the union operated facilities, and so there's be it's a very close tie because most of the union facilities are large facilities. And we have vendors in most of us already. So as the hearing progresses, we'll keep you up to date. Let's see, what other legislation we got going?
Okay, David Spagnuolo.
All right, thank you, Roy. Thank you very much for your report. I wanted to give an opportunity. I don't know if Jeff, Tom, Mitch, or Joe Xavier would like to say anything, but this is your opportunity if you did want to make a comment or two.
I just, first I want to thank RSVC for putting on this luncheon. I know, you know, this time attendance is a little down, but next time I'm sure it's going to be a lot bigger since it's up in Sacramento and since it's sort of the opposite of the, you know, when you have your statewide training conference. But I just want to say, I'm not going to go into this at great length, but I just want to say it is my intention to continue to work very closely with all of you in RSVC in terms of making sure that any lobbying that needs to get done, the advocacy that needs to get done, we fulfill from a CCB perspective. So I need to assure you that I will continue to be there in any role that you need me to fulfill. Thank you.
Just a couple of things. I trust most of you were at the general session yesterday where I gave some information about the program. One thing that I would share with you here is that Deb Meyer had planned to be here. Unfortunately, there are a number of work issues that have come up that precluded her from joining you, but she sends you her best wishes for another successful meeting and conference. So And if those of you who were not there or who were there, if you have any questions as this session progresses, I'd be glad to address those. So glad to be here. It's an organization that I had a privilege of being a member and an officer of, albeit many, many years ago.
I want to again thank David and Roy for inviting me and Donna. I will be at Sagebrush in February. I have to visit some of the money that I've left there over the years. And you have to stay inside Vegas in February because it's too cold, at least for Californians, to go outside. We obviously feel strongly that the Randolph Shepherd program must remain. I heard some of the talk about changes that need to be made, and I think that's right. But we have to make sure those changes work to the advantage of vendors. And you can be assured that ACB will continue to remain vigilant. I will be going down to NCSAB in a couple of weeks. They're going to get an earful from me on our position relative to rehabilitation services, including the Randolph Shepherd program. And we'll continue our strong partnership with the national vendors and with the California vendors. So thank you.
Thank you, Ms. and Joe and Jeff.
Our RSVA secretary is sitting right next to Mitch over here, and I just wanted to say that she's been working really diligently on the convention committee for Sagebrush. And we've ended up a lot of really good speakers of importance. We have Lene Rutledge, who's the new RSA commissioner, coming. Suzanne Mitchell from RSA. And Ray Hopkins' replacement, Daniel Fry. So it'll be, I think, one of his first meetings where vendors will really have access to him from all over. So that's those three speakers right in its... are going to be good. PepsiCo is going to be there, and Frito-Lay is going to be there with their new program. I don't know, but they have a lot of really good speakers lined up. So just wanted to make you guys aware that you should come. It's February 5th through the 11th, and it'll be a good conference. Okay, to Edie. Oh, February 7th through the 11th? Yeah, I'm sorry. February 7th through the 11th.
Okay, no problem. I'd like to introduce you to our speaker. His name is Dan Simple, and according to what he said, it's without an M and an E, right? Okay. And also, he's from Eau Claire, and that's with a capital C, right? Okay. Okay, that was cute. Anyway, Dan has just recently got elected to the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America convention that we held in Phoenix. And like Dan indicated last night, he's been with RSVA for 11 years, which is kind of new in a sense, you know, with our organization, because many of us have been there for many, many years. And but Dan has done a remarkable job of national accounting, trying to get a national contract that would help the vendors as well as give a rebate back to the national organization. And trying to get that off the ground is not an easy task. But Dan is from Wisconsin, and we would like to have you welcome Dan Simple.
And many thanks for the invitation to attend. And it's a fine group. I spent... yesterday with my wife Sue and I, and so I really don't want to rehash a lot of what we talked about last night, but I think what we want to focus on is primarily, you know, I just became president in July, and I had one tremendous mistake in not sharing with Mitch some information that good partners should share. I apologize to Mitch, and that will never happen again. And artist promises she will help remind me that it never happens again. but you know, that's the only way you can sustain a partnership, is by sharing information. We each have to know what each other are doing, support each other, and again, anything like that that happens, let me know as soon as possible, and we'll correct it. We're human beings, and we do make mistakes. And I remember 35 years ago when I built my first house, the contractor says, "I'll guarantee your house for 10 years." He said, "I'll guarantee something will go wrong because it's built by human hands, but I will fix it." And so if it's built by human hands, it needs to be fixed every now and then. And that's true with this with our program. There are many things that need to be fixed, or maybe not fixed is not the right word, maybe adjusted or readjusted or reestablished or whatever else we have. And with that, you know, it's in our hands. We have power, we have the ability through partnerships with ACB, CCB, with all these types of partners across the country, we can correct, you know, and pick up what has gone wrong in the last year and improve gone right. There's many things that have gone right, and we can improve upon those. You know, with change comes opportunity. Just here last month, my particular Vistar out of Minneapolis, they changed my delivery date. I do not have freezer space on site at my warehouse for my frozen food. It comes in, I take it off the truck, put it on my truck, and I take it to my facilities, to my prison, my post office, and put it, and I got freezer space there. They changed my delivery date. And so I said, fine. I said, you know, you messed me up, because I really cannot change my route because of my service policy I have. I says, you know, with change comes opportunity. I found a couple other venue suppliers, and they were puzzled when I said, with change comes opportunity. I said, no, I had the opportunity to find out what other suppliers are available in pricing and so forth. So you know, what seems to be a doomsday, it can always be turned into a nice bed of roses. And that's what we have to look at this program. And hopefully we'll bring that with Sagebrush in February. You know, change surrounds us, maximize your potential, improve customer service. We have a professional speaker coming to PepsiCo sponsoring for us. We'll highlight customer service for us and tell the importance of customer service, things that we have forgotten and the corporate world has forgotten in the last 20 years is that, you know, in my particular business, I have a two-hour turnaround policy on complaints. And that's why I never turn my cell phone off. And at Sagebrush, I will not ask anyone to turn a cell phone off. Just ask them to leave room when you get a call. We are running a business, and service is contingent. We as blind vendors can provide that type of service. Canteen, Marriott, and Sodexo cannot do that. But coupled with partnerships and service, and we have our Pepsi contract. That was in jeopardy. Pepsi, they reorganized 4 years ago. They reorganized 3 years ago. They reorganized 2 years ago. A year and a half ago, they merged with PPG, Pepsi Bottling Group. And they downsized this past April. We lost our national accounts rep, Leslie Schwartz. And it put us in jeopardy because they're looking for places to cut. And they gave RSVA many thousands of dollars in each state affiliate, many thousands of dollars in rebates for every case of Pepsi and bottled package goods that we sold. We're in jeopardy because they say, what are you giving back? What do you, you know, and that's what it is. You know, it's a partnership. You know, it's not, PepsiCo and Frito and Clover Hill, whoever, they don't look at us as an entitlement program. They look at us as a business relationship. So what are we giving back? I'll help you promote your products. And that's what we are in the process of doing now, promoting the PepsiCo and Frito products. We'll be entering the contract with Clover Hill, you know, Pierre Foods, and on down the line. But it's no longer an entitlement world. We're business people who just have to be blind. We're business people first. And so with the Pepsi, with hopefully that we've got that rebuilt that now with the loss of our accounts rep. We went up two layers in the pyramid scale with PepsiCo Corporation and merged with PPG. We should have a stronger Pepsi account. We entered into a Frito-Lay program, which Frito-Lay is food service division of PepsiCo. but it's a two totally separate operations. Their marriage is taking 3 years, and it's still not consummated yet. But we're helping consummate that because we're getting to the point where we can work with one person for both accounts, Pepsi and Frito-Lay. And we contrary to what you may hear from NFB, we originated the Frito-Lay program. They stiff-armed NFB for several years. We run the pilot, RSV run the pilot, a year and a half ago. We found many little nuances that need to be corrected and need to be changed. Again, we had to change things. What we learned on that six-month pilot, and we made some drastic changes. And lo and behold, what we ended up with is a Frito Reap program that puts all of us blind vendors on a level playing field with the Canteens, Marriott, Sodexos. We're all eligible for the same rebate, regardless of the volume we sell. That's been a hang-up since I've been around, is that we're all small operators. We're all small business people. We can't possibly have the buying power individually that the Marriott and Canteens and Sodexos have. But as a group, we get far more buying power. By some standards, we're the third largest vending organization in the world. By the worst standards, we're the seventh largest vending organization in the world. But we need to stay together to exercise our buying power and exercise our partnerships and build our partnerships. Give back what they give us and not just expect to give and have them to give and for us to take at all times. It's a business relationship, and we'll build upon it. We will change our attitude towards that, and we'll change our attitudes towards customer service, and we will work. This program will live as long as we're willing to make those changes. And remember that Randolph Shepherd Act, 1943, revised in 1974, is a right, but primarily and first, it's a privilege. It is a privilege for me to go to my post office, to my universities, to my prisons, to my waysites, to my private office buildings, and service these people. Being a former state employee, I value service. And being a consumer fraud investigator, I've seen what was the demise of many companies, large and small alike. This customer service, and that's the only way we can survive. Good friends of mine, in the car dealerships and home improvement dealership business over the years, became multi-millionaires, billionaires, and they charge exorbitant prices, in my opinion. And I'll tell them it to their face, but we're still good. We still break bread together and, you know, bend our elbows with a glass of wine. But they became millionaires and billionaires because they provided service. You could depend upon them. And they were there. And they charged you for it, and people didn't mind paying it because they knew they could count on you. And that's what I most strongly felt as blind vendors. Our customers can count on us. I've run across my predecessor in my vending route. He says, "Well, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't go out today." And I said, "Wait a minute. No, you know, you're obligated. It's your obligation. You know, it is. You know, you have the right to be there, but you can lose that right awfully fast." And I think that's what's driven a lot of the negativism towards this program over the last few years. Is that we felt, or too many of us felt, it was entitlement, and they can't kick us out. Yes, they can, because when I was in law enforcement business for 21 years, we in the state of Wisconsin, for a small agency, we had the strongest law enforcement ability of any state agency or federal agency. The feds would come to us, the FBI would come to us. Can you do this with us? Because we could go to anyone's bank account. If they're running any kind of a quasi-business, they commingle accounts, we had access to it under Wisconsin law. So we had the strongest law enforcement authority of any state. We rarely, if ever, used it. I never personally used all of our authority. I never physically made an arrest, never put handcuffs on anybody. I never carried a gun. And that's why I love my job, because I don't have to carry a gun. But we had that ability, but we never used it, because the quickest way to lose your authority is to use it. And that's what I think in some respects, not all respects, has happened to this program, is we've used the right rather than appreciate and extend the privilege of it. And by us staying together, we can get back what we've lost in the last few years and get our customer respect back. Respect you cannot command, you have to earn it. And blind vendors have far more advantage and are far more capable of earning that respect of your customers than any other company out there in the world. Companies, canteen, hire people, and you've all run into them. They're there. They want to get their hours in, and they don't care what kind of job they do. They're doing what they're told to do. We do what we want our customers tell us to do. And it's the way we'll get this program back, by changing our attitudes. And those around us, one thing I've learned over speaking to trade associations, automobile dealer associations, car manufacturer association over the years, is that people are at a meeting like this, speaking to the choir, because you're here to learn and you want to improve. So what we have to do as this group is reach out to those that aren't here today, that are still part of our group. They have to be with us. They have to be with us. And that just goes so strong with our Frito-Lay program and our Pepsi program, our Clover. If we don't hang together on it, we'll surely hang alone. And the money is there, the incentives are there, built in a lot of incentives for the operators, and for the national organization. It's good money, but all we have to do is just earn it and earn the respect of our customers. And that, with that, you will be really the focus of our sagebrush, and we'll try to earn the respect of the people in Washington. We'll have a lot of those folks there, and we'll have people from speakers from the NFB with us as well. Terry Smith and Mike Hooks out of Texas. They will be part of our program, because we have our differences with NFB or whatever else, but yet we have to work together to get accomplished a lot of these things. I just sent out a letter yesterday through to the DOD with respect to putting a military base out on the procurement list. It should come to us. And so we objected to that. And we used ACB, the previous executive officer's interpretation. I quoted that in that letter and sent it to you. The comment period is due Monday. I wasn't aware of it until yesterday morning. Kim Venable in our national office in New Orleans, I called her, says, "Kim, I'm going to email you a letter, doctor it up, put it on our letterhead, get it." And she overnighted it last at 5 o'clock. She made it in time to go. It will be there Monday morning, filing our objection to them putting this on a procurement list. Got another email from Katrina McDonald yesterday afternoon that the senator that had just been tapped on the shoulder, Obama, for a higher position in Senate. And he's always kind of stiff-armed us, but he has a distrust for NFB, so he's reaching out to us. And he will be on the HELP committee, which former Senator Kennedy's committee, but Ensign from your neighboring state, Arizona, is taking that over. And so we can soften that HELP committee. By this door, he opened the door, we're going to walk through it. And we have that capability, as Roy and Hazel Harmon and Ron Eller from North Carolina showed us here last month. Within 2 days, we set up a $500 plate luncheon. And they attended, they raised their own funds, because we as an organization cannot contribute. But they stepped up to the plate and did it. And so we'll be doing more of that with the demise of BEA. The BEA will be defunct as of November 15th for a lot of reasons. And hopefully none of it falls on our shoulders. I think we did everything we could to hold it together. But there's just other circumstances that are beyond our control. But we as an organization, we step up. We do it. And that's the only way the program will survive, stay alive. Is we step up the plate, work together, reach out to our colleagues. Those that couldn't make it today because they were off last week to a training session. It's hard for a small business person to take 2 weekends off in a row, and I can understand that. I appreciate that. But we have to, as a group here today, have to reach out to those and get them on board with us and work together. And CB, we got a new California state president, and I know she's with us. Our NAPA ACB president's with us. As long as I don't step on his toes too many more times, and that will not happen. With Artis's help again. But we'll keep building those partnerships, and that's how this organization and this program will survive. Thank you. Anyone have any questions that I can do my best to answer?
It was my understanding that while the alliance officially is going away, that there had been some talk about having Linchpin, Katrina McDonald's organization, brought in on a as-needed basis or under contract. So what's the status of that, if any?
Yeah, that will happen, and it's pretty much in place already. Katrina McDonald was on a limited retainer prior to initiation of BEA and through NCSAB. NCSAB will put her back in that capacity. She will not, BEA will be defunct. Linchpin will still be under NCSAB, so we'll have to work through that way. But the beautiful thing about it is Katrina McDonald, you know, she was a fast learner, and she's fallen in love with this program. So she's not going to just totally walk away from it. So I think we're still going to get a lot of hours out of her, a lot of contacts, because she realizes what a nice group of people we have here and how friendly and how fast we can step up to the plate. So she's not going to go away. She'll still be on a minimum retainer. And NCSAB was the major contributor for BEA, and they had the embezzlement situation going on 2 years ago. They were insured, so yeah. They will be getting their insurance money back, and that's what they'll reinstate. But Katrina, yeah, at the level she was 5 years ago.
And I guess I have a second kind of unrelated question, and I agree. I agreed with your statement last night. Lene Rutledge, I think, is supportive. Blindness as a disability for her is kind of new territory. What was your sense? What did you take away from the RSA-sponsored conference last June in terms of RSA's commitment, particularly insofar as helping states promote the program and really putting some time and effort into build program?
That's a multifaceted question, and I could talk on that all afternoon. Lene is visually impaired herself.
Right.
That is one of her disabilities.
Right.
She's in the RSA conference. Right. We felt it was a mini blast or a replacement of a blast. That could be argued that, I can argue against it, but they argue. You know, either way, that's irrelevant. The fact of the matter is what you did, Mitch, that really turns the tide for us as ACB affiliate, is that Lene Rutledge came on board late January, and she appeared at Sagebrush only a week or 2 weeks on the job. And by that time, the RSA was planned and pretty much in motion through the university out there in Washington. And when she found out that NFB was controlling a lot of the issues there, and it's partly because, RSVA may have dropped the ball in some instances, but at that point, Lene could not stop the train. It was too far in progress. Mitch sent a letter to Lene saying, why wasn't ACB and RSVA more involved? She responded. And so what that has, that brought us up a couple rungs on the ladder, and it maybe didn't bring in it, but my personal opinion, it brought NFB down a couple of steps on the ladder. They are not enamored with her as much as I am. They would rather, in fact, they made a statement on the last steering committee call that we should lobby to get Schroeder back in as commissioner. No, I'll tell you, let's keep Lene. Fred Schroeder. They feel that he would be more. I said, no, Lene, she's gonna give us equal respect with NFB, and it won't be, even though it's tilted, the table's tilted that way. And I think, so that with the RSA convention, even though we didn't have a strong presence there, in her mind, we'll have a stronger presence on the next one, and she will see to that. And I think the next one's going to come faster than we think under her reign. And she will listen. That's why we're the initiative there, the thought is there in the white paper to move for regulatory change rather than statutory change. And I think with Lene, we're poised as best we could ever be poised.
Thank you.
Okay, Joe has.
Joe Xavier, I don't know if this is on the national radar, but something that I saw occur here recently in California with a Marine Corps contract where the bundling across state lines, you know, and there are those that have a perspective that it was more intentional than accidental. So be it. It was, it was, and we overcame that hurdle. But there is something else that kind of worked its way into the process that I would anticipate being very significant for the Randolph-Shepard Act on DOD facilities moving forward. It was insertion of a requirement for Ability 1 into the contract. And the relationship between Randolph-Shepard and Ability 1 has an opportunity for growth. And I think if that relationship isn't kindled and developed, that when the opportunity for another DOD contract comes along and it requires the Ability 1 participation, how will that be achieved to meet the requirements of the submission? If that's not on the radar of individuals, I might suggest that some thought be given to that. And I, frankly, don't ask me for the magic, who used the silver bullet analogy yesterday? Somebody did. Don't ask me for that, but I think it was something that it appeared subtle, but it wasn't as subtle, and I know that we had a couple gyrations to work through here in California to get that proposal submitted.
Yeah, the contract bundling, they attempted it on the East Coast, and it didn't go over very well, and they attempted it on the West Coast here, and they backed off considerably, with the exception of the Marine. Now they're trying to kind of micro scale it down. So that's still in DOD's mind. They would like to bundle this issue. And there's other, now they're trying to transgress into other types of way of handling it. But you're right, NISH and Ability 1, you know, which is now Ability 1, they do have the upper hand on us. And that's because they are much more, I get nice, for lack of a better term, they have the capability of dealing with these national contracts on the procurement list. And you know, we're trying to stop the stuff from going on the procurement list coming to us first. But that last night we talked about one of the recommendations of the White Bear is a nominee agency. And that's one of the could be, but depending how we, you know, Mr. We got to be very careful how this is engineered. Any of these recommendations, we got to monitor. We got to be involved. We can't just let it happen. We got to be there to push things in the right direction. But as a nominee agency, and that's one thought we discussed in the steering committee, was that by having an agency, that would put us on a threshold with Ability 1. Then we will, and because so many states in the Randolph-Shepard program don't want to bid on a different various types of contracts, you know, primarily because they don't want to expose themselves to liability, or they don't have the time or the human resources to handle it. This or that, a lot of varying excuses. So all under a federal nominee agency, all they do is maintain the RSA rights, but delegate them over to the federal nominee. But then by having a federal nominee, we could go in there on the equal par with Ability 1 and put a bid in for every contract. And that we'd also then extend that beyond the full service contract. But again, like Mr. says, we gotta you know, nurture this thing and give it a lot of TLC if someone grabs hold of this idea and really work through. And that's why, you know, I feel so bad that I sidestepped Mitch here, and that we need that partnership. We need everybody to keep that rolling and to watch it, because I personally can't watch it all. And we no longer will have the full time of the Katrina McDonald to watch it all. So it'll be up to us in this room as leaders of the organization to come to this and foster that and nurture it and give all the TLC it needs to. But that, I think, if we can get that, that'll, in my mind, will help us. It's not the silver bullet or whatever else, but it will give us that much better leg to stand on by having this nominee. And, you know, I maybe need to get back off that, and I've been pitching that for a couple of months now, and let somebody else, hopefully somebody else, take that ball and get it rolling, because that's what it takes in some organization to pick up some of those in the white paper and through. But what you have mentioned there, you know, others may have a different idea, but I think the nominee would resolve a lot of that for us.
That's a national nominee agency that you're talking about, right?
Okay, if you got a few minutes, I'll give you some of the dialogue that we did in teleconference over on the steering committee on this nominee agency. It takes money to run a nominee agency, and how we'd fund it was a bitter debate. And first figures came out, okay, we'll charge a 5% surcharge on all those that earn over $100,000. It's primarily military contractors and a few larger vending operations. And then it was, okay. But then someone, had been Jim Edrice. I'm not going to throw any name. One of the people I said, wait a minute. Some states are already charging 40 or 50% set aside, and you nick them another 5% and object, this and that. So basically, then we said, 3% over 75,000, 3% over 150,000, 2%. So the last draft, one that haven't seen anything yet, one could come out today yet. But the last draft, we eliminated figures, and just that there will be a surcharge off the set aside to pay for a federal nominee agency that to support the RSA. And once that's established, someone picks that ball up and runs with it, it's established, RSA could contribute money to support it as well. But they're not on the bandwagon with that yet. They're listening with during the dialogue, the white paper, but their input is very minimal because a lot of the white paper recommendation will be geared towards them, how to get them more in tune with what we need to happen in the next 5, 10, 20 years. I think if someone would move, it would go. And then that, again, we'd have to really watch that how, because I surely don't want to, when somebody earns $50,000, $60,000 a year, have them pay an extra 5% to some nominee. That's probably not right. We need to do call it graduated scale. Like the federal income tax is, most state income tax are graduated. The more you earn, the more you pay. And a lot of people don't like that. There's a lot of terminology that, so we just try to make it as generic as possible and let whoever picks up the ball, let them roll it out. And then with Mitch's help, we'll mentor it and we'll guide it in the right direction.
I just have one personal comment because I know Roy would say it too. Joe X is correct on this issue because Roy's teaming partner has come out and has said that they have been assured that it's not just the Marines that are going to be doing the military bundling. It is going to go through all of our armed forces, and the new DODs that will be coming up will be bundled, and Ability One they'll have to reckon with. And that's a out-of-the-box thought, Joe, of working with Ability One on that. That's not a bad thought.
Yeah, we've got a couple of situations across. There is partnerships with Ability One. My understanding is they're not very well at this point. They're a little ill, and they need to have a little aspirin thrown on them. But again, anything that's sick can be brought back to good health. And if you get people guiding it, I think it can be stabilized.
Okay, David Hanlon has a question.
Listen, we have time for just two more questions, and I'm one of them.
Okay.
Dan, how do you see or how do you envision a national nominee agency in relation to RSA in addition to NCSAB? Do you see it as a national license for all vendors? In other words, they can go for any location throughout the United States? Or do you see a national nominee agency developing locations, although that is the responsibility of each state SLA? I'm trying to envision how the national nominee agency could work.
Yeah. The initial dialogue all the way through to the final draft as of yesterday, was that the agency would not necessarily go out and create, but that's one thing we talked about, is that the governments are not getting any bigger. They're not building a lot of new buildings, and so we need to expand into the private sector. And I've always believed that we blind vendors can do vending service a lot better than the private world. So we need to start competing with them. We've always been, the year's been below the radar. We've been above the radar for the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. stay above radar. It's much more comfortable above there when the people see what you're doing, when you're transparent. So to create the initial, my vision is the initial work for the nominee, federal nominee, would be just to latch on to ones where we already have priority that certain states have backed away from. And we latch onto those. And with that, it's a separate recommendation, is cross-training, standardized training. And that comes up at every conference. And I've been to a lot of them over the last 11, 12 years. And cross-training comes up, but once you get back home, everybody says, oh, I don't want people from, you know, Wisconsin coming to take my California route, and I don't want California coming to Wisconsin to take my route. You know, to die. It never goes any further than a national conference. But we left it in the white paper because it's a critical issue. National training, and I'll relate it to administrative code that I used to, you know, business practice laws, fair business practice laws. We're minimum standards. The laws that we enforce in consumer protection, we're minimum standards. A business could survive by complying with the law, but if they wanted to thrive, they had to go above and beyond the law. So that training standard would be a minimum standard. You know, but not necessarily, and again, as Mitch pointed out, we got to make and guide it, make sure it goes in the right direction, and not allow it just to be a total training standard. You would have to, okay, here's the minimum standard every state has to have, and if you want in your state, just like any other federal law, you can build upon it. You can't diminish it, but you can build upon it and require other training, whatever else, to allow it transfer. But that's a separate issue in the paper, but yet to me, it's a related issue. Is couple these two together, the cross training, so that we can utilize and have ability to bring some people from other states where we don't have the blind personnel to take on a particular route, and they could work through the federal nominee agency.
Okay, Joe X is or Joe Xavier has a
I call Joe X
has another question. Hold on.
Just more of a comment, and that is, when these proposals come out from DOD, whatever fashion they come out in, whether it's bundled or single base, it's the provisions that they're asking to be satisfied, if it could be very challenging. And as they insert provisions into these proposals, if the Randolph-Shepard program cannot meet those provisions, then we're not going to be able to participate in that. So I think that some thought needs to be looked at in those provisions that are coming out. I sense a move to a little more sophistication on their part in terms of what provisions they're putting into their contracts. Ability one is one, but there could be others. There's those requirements that you need to meet in order to be competitive or to be eligible to participate. And so if you need to submit as part of your proposal a component that deals with ability one or any other factor, it's the alignment between what they're going to require and what Randolph Shepard can deliver is going to be a challenge as we move forward.
Yeah, that's about as accurate as you can get. You know, there's a lot of things that have happened that led to the bundling, and I'm going to use Wisconsin as a textbook example. You know, we lost Fort McCoy in Wisconsin for service reasons. You know, that's why. But when they reissued the contract, they during this whole entire process, last 10 years, you know, we've been after DOD, but we want more NISH has been after, we want all the military dining. But Congress, all of a sudden, they got the backlash out of it. They say, wait a minute, why is Department of Defense bidding out these contracts? Blind vendor makes $1 million a year, $500,000 a year. The partner makes $500,000 a year. Is that a lot? Is that an exorbitant profit on a $10 million contract? Probably so. So then Congress went to DOD and they say, hey, wait a minute, you better restructure your bidding process. So when they read Fort McCoy, they took out a lot of the money-making factors out of it, the profit factors. And it got to the point where, you know, for myself and for a teaming partner to go and manage it, there wouldn't be too much money left for us as a profit. And there's a lot of time. There's so many things they can do at that contract. Usually anywhere from 35 to 50 pages of military dining contracts. And there's so much they can change, and that's what they're doing. And like you said, they're becoming more sophisticated because Congress put pressure on them. Like we put pressure on Congress, well, Congress, they got both sides of it, and they say, wait a minute, there's something wrong on both sides. We approached it wrong, probably. DOD approached it wrong, so Congress stepped in, and and Ted Kennedy stepped in into a degree. And so they just refined their contract. And every contract they've been issuing is a whole new animal. It used to be that teaming partners or a blind person could go look at a military contract, and they're all, you know, blueprints. But now everyone is new and so much more sophisticated. There are procurement officers that are administering these, and they're already doing that. They only have, I think, three procurement officers across the United States to handle all of military dining, and that is so they can keep a handle on things and get these, keep refining and make these contracts more sophisticated. And that's just another animal to deal with. But we, I think, under, if we organize ourselves under a nominee agency or some other structure, we can deal with it. We can still provide work for blind people. You know, they don't have, you know, a blind person, you know, it's a nice carrot out there to say, well, you're going to make $500,000 million a year. That's a sweet carrot. Is it too sweet of a carrot? Probably. You know, what's wrong with making $120,000? And that sounds like a lot of money, but if a blind vendor, I want to make sure I emphasize this, so I get in trouble every time I don't, is that if a blind vendor earns $90,000 a year, that's comparable to a state employee earning $60,000 a year or $55,000. Because when we earn 90, there's no fringe benefits. We pay our Social Security, our FICA, we pay our own health insurance, everything out of that. Or a state employee or a federal employee, if they earn 60 or 65,000, they're equal to $90,000 or $95,000. So my goal is that every blind vendor should be capable, you know, and that's a fair return for your dollar investment, your time in running a private business. But $500,000 or $1 million, I'm conservative fiscally, but yet I'm a substantially liberal, and I don't know that anyone's worth that kind of money in a year's time. You know, that's my, but because there's so many of us that need to be brought up a little bit more, and we just need to spread the wealth. I'm getting too much personal philosophy. Sorry about that.
Okay, Dan. Okay, well, thank you very much, Dan, for coming and sharing your thoughts. And this will conclude our luncheon. Thank you all very much for coming, and we'll see you next spring, probably in Sacramento, I guess. Bye-bye. Thank you. Yeah. By the way, I want to thank Hazel. Thank you for doing the mic.
For those vendors who are in the room, I just want to let you know that the Transportation Act is going to be opened up again next year. And that just means that the rest areas nationwide are going to be subjected to privatization again. Here we go again.